No, just.
Detective Sotero, why don't you come up and be sworn?
Detective Sotero, he testified earlier.
Why don't we state his name on the record?
I was getting just reminded he's from.
And he was actually just recently. Wasn't he?
Let's start over. Would you please say your name and spell your name on the record?
Joseph Sotero. Josephsutera.
You testified earlier in this trial. Is that correct?
Correct.
And we need to ask you some questions today that may or may not become important later in the trial. But as I understand it, you're not going to be available next week.
That's correct.
Were you involved in the police interview of Isar Met during the early morning hours of April 2nd, 2008?
I was.
About what time of the morning did that interview?
The early morning hours. I'm not sure the exact time.
4, I believe.
That sounds right.
Was that interview video and audio recorded?
It was.
And have you had a chance since that time to review that recording?
I reviewed the transcript from the recording. I haven't reviewed the recording recently.
Let's talk about that transcript. When was the transcript created and by whom?
The transcript was created by the FBI, and I don't know the date. I don't know the date.
Do you recall the name Ken Ong as the FBI language specialist who did that transcript?
I don't.
Let me show you a copy.
Okay.
Your Honor, I'm not going to have this marked. This is the same transcript that was included in the closed part of the record for the emotional suppressor. Just ask you to look through that quickly.
Yeah, the translator was Ken Ong, and it was created in September of 2008, it appears.
Who else was there during the interview of Isar Met?
FBI agent Ross and interpreter Wynn. And I forget his last name as well.
Tell us how Wynn became the interpreter for you that night.
I was assigned to interview some of the roommates. I think I interviewed two of the roommates as well as the younger male who was actually in the apartment, and then assigned to interview Isar as well. I was told by supervisors that we had two interpreters we were using. I had used a different interpreter for these other interviews, and when I got to Isar Met, that interpreter was no longer available, although I wanted to use him because I'd used him on the other ones, and things went relatively smoothly for those. But I was told he wasn't available, and the only interpreter available was this Wynn.
So it was decided to proceed with Wynn as the translator?
Yes.
How did that go compared to your other interviews?
Not well.
Now that you've reviewed the transcript that was created by the FBI were there significant problems with that translation?
Yes.
We'll get back to that in a few minutes. Let me just ask you, did you or Agent Ross speak with Isar Met in any circumstance or any setting outside what was recorded?
No.
Did Wynn, the interpreter, speak to Isar Met in any setting that was not captured in that video?
Not that I was aware of. I don't believe that would be possible.
At the beginning of the recording, it appears that Isar Met is in the room, in the interview room, and you, Agent Ross, and the interpreter all come in at the same time. Is that your recollection?
That's correct.
At some point during the questioning, you all take a break.
That's correct.
What happened during that break?
We pulled all of us came out of the room, Wynn, Ross, and I. We had some discussion with some other detectives regarding the questioning and went back in again.
And where was Isar Met when the rest of you left?
He was still in the interview room.
During that break, was there any opportunity for Wynn to speak to Isar Met without the recording going, which would have captured that?
No.
At the end of the interview, same question. Was there any opportunity for the interpreter to speak to Isar Met that would not have been on the recording?
No.
Does the transcript that you've referred to here this morning, created in September of 2008, more accurately reflect what was said during the interview than what's on the recording?
Yes.
Tell us what you noticed in terms of the major differences between what's in the transcript and what you understood during the actual interview.
There were many things that I had attempted to relay to Isar Met, many questions, not just me, but Ross attempted to relay to him that never got relayed correctly. There were many things that Mr. Met said that never got relayed back to us correctly, many, many things.
Were there also things that the translator said to Isar Met that he didn't tell you in English what he was saying?
Oh, yes. Yes.
At any time during that interview, did you ask Wynn to tell Isar Met that if he didn't tell you the exact truth, he would be severely punished?
No.
Oh, is it? If he's a law student,
he's a law student.
That's fine.
He's there, Judge Hanson.
Okay, that's fine. You're welcome. We just we're not an official court yet. Okay, Mr. Sorry.
At any time during that interview, did you or Agent Ross request Wynn to tell Isar Met that if he didn't tell you everything, you would be hit or hurt in some way?
No.
Did you ever tell him that if he didn't do that appropriately, you would kill him?
No.
Had you been aware of many of the things that Isar Met actually said, as you've read the transcript, had those been appropriately translated to you, would you have done the interview somewhat differently?
Yeah, very much so.
Just generally explain that.
Just, well, not knowing what he actually said, I mean, things would have gone, the follow-up questions obviously would have been different. Like I said, there were so many things that I never knew he said, which I could have asked him additional questions on, which could have clarified many things.
Based on what was translated to you, by the end of the interview, had Isar Med admitted to you that he was the cause of Sunuma's death?
Yes.
By the end of the interview, had he admitted to you that he put Sunuma's body in the shower?
Yes.
In the basement of his apartment?
Yes.
Then what did he say he did?
Well, he said he noticed that the shoes, her shoes, were in a position where upstairs, where the roommates could have seen them. So he went down and threw those in the bathroom as well. And then he immediately fled the apartment and went to his uncle's house using public transportation. I think he said the bus or a train and the bus combination.
When he said that he put Sunumu's body into the shower, did he admit to you he knew she was dead?
Yes, he did.
What did he say had happened that caused her to die?
There were a couple versions, but in a nutshell, he said that she had fallen down the stairs and he was trying to comfort her. He said she was going to tell her father, and he was concerned about that, and she tried to escape, and so he pulled on her leg, I believe, and that made her somehow flung her against the wall, and then she began shaking and then died.
When did he say she began shaking and died?
After he had pulled her leg and she had fallen and hit her head on the wall.
After falling down the stairs as well.
That's right.
Do you know how the FBI was provided with a copy of the videotape to create this transcript?
Do I know how they were provided with it?
Yes.
I just know, I don't know who gave them the DVD. Somebody obviously gave them the DVD. I don't know how it got to them.
Have you gone through the transcript and compared it to what's in that recording and your own memory? And does it appear to cover the entire recorded interview?
Yes, it appears to cover the entire interview.
Fits with your memory.
Yes.
That's all.
Thank you, Jim. Morning again, Detective.
You're not going to ask me any color questions.
I'm not going to ask a color question. Although, I could take a shot.
The suit's gray. Dark gray.
It's
red, mostly.
Oh, wow. Okay. You've improved since yesterday.
It's shades. Shades are tough. Some shades.
Takasatara, you weren't at Isar's aunt's house when Isar was arrested, right?
Right, I was not.
But you have some general information about him being taken into custody at his aunt's house, correct?
Yeah, I was aware of that.
And then transported to a police station?
Our police station, I believe it was by Officer Montes, and then he was placed in the holding cell.
So, promptly after Mr. Met had been arrested at his aunt's house, he would have been taken to your police station and put in a holding cell, right?
That's right.
And then held there until your questioning and Agent Ross's questioning of him began, right?
That's correct.
Do you know how long that was?
How long he was in the holding cell?
Yes, before you began the questioning.
It started at 3 in the morning, 3:30 in the morning. I believe he was in custody. I'm not exactly sure the time, between 8 and 10 in the evening, probably. So he was in there several hours, 7, 8 hours maybe. Maybe less. I'm not.
And the area where he's being detained, it's actually a cell.
Yeah, there's a set of holding cells, and it's actually on the other side of the building from the actual interview room area.
And at that point, had his clothing been taken for processing, or was he still in his?
He was still in the clothing that he was in. The removal of the clothing didn't happen and back in the holding cell until after the interview. He was placed back in the holding cell.
So, before the questioning of Mr. Met began, your understanding, Detective, was that the FBI had somehow arranged for an interpreter, right?
That's my understanding.
So, let me just focus on you for a minute before I focus on Agent Ross. You're one of the detectives that's going to be conducting the questioning of Mr. Met, right?
Right.
And you knew going into that questioning that you were dealing with a child homicide, right?
Yes.
And you knew generally from your experience and years of training that a child homicide case could end up being a capital murder or death penalty case.
You know, I don't know that that was in my mind. Any homicide case is an important, high-profile, important case.
Okay. In any event, it was a serious matter, correct?
Correct.
So, in your experience and training, you take some precaution to make sure that...
It's okay.
Before you begin interviewing a prime suspect in a child homicide case, that you're able to communicate with that person, right?
Yeah, that's why there was an interpreter there.
So that goes to the heart of my question. What steps did you and or your agency take to make sure you had an adequate interpreter present when questioning a prime suspect in a child homicide?
Well, you know, you have to take it and realize that, number one, I have to trust the people that supervise me. That are coordinating efforts. Unfortunately, there was a breakdown with that. I had used this other interpreter for 3 interviews, and everything seemed very good. You know, in hindsight, obviously I would have inquired about him, but I just had a trust that other people had not steered me wrong with that.
In that regard, Detective, who in your chain of command had taken a look at this issue of having an adequate interpreter for Mr. Met's interview?
That was above me. I don't know. I don't know where that came from. And like I said, I was aware that the one I had used for the 3 previous interviews seemed very competent, and I don't remember if I spoke to him before, but I was aware he was I knew he was a court-certified interpreter, and, that's my assumption. I made an assumption the other interpreter was a court-certified interpreter. I didn't know how else they would have been there in our office.
Once Mong Mong was gone, the one you had used previously for interviews,
yes,
and you were now left with a new guy, my question to you specifically is, what timeout did you take to make sure with your chain of command you knew who he was, that he would be able to translate fluently, and what connections he may have to Mr. Met or Senator's family? What steps did you take in that
regard? I didn't. Kenny.
So what background information did you have about this brand new interpreter that you didn't know?
Again, my understanding was that the FBI had at least assisted in getting two interpreters. Where that information came from to me, I can't recall. It's a detail that at the time was small, which, you know, became in hindsight much bigger than it was.
Did you have any information going into that interview of Mr. Met, detective, that the interpreter you were about to use actually knew Sernamu's family?
No, I had no idea.
And that he had actually spoken to Sernamu's mother and father in the past?
I didn't know that.
And you certainly didn't know anything about his language ability or fluency, obviously.
Correct.
What information did you have, if any, about this brand new interpreter's ethnic background relative to East Armets and whether there might be a clash ethnically?
None.
So as you had a chance to review the transcript that's sitting before you now, on the witness stand, and then compare it to your memory of the interview and the DVD, there are some fundamental breakdowns of communication throughout this interview, right?
Yep. Yes.
And there are times when you and Agent Ross are simply not communicating through the interpreter to East Armet, right?
Yes.
And vice versa, there are times when East Armet is answering and not communicating back to you and Agent Ross, right?
Yes. You can probably see some frustration on my face in that interview, more than likely.
I mean, obviously, Detective, you don't speak Burmese or any dialect that the interpreter was using.
That's true.
And so you obviously didn't know what was or wasn't being said to Sarmat by the interpreter.
That's correct. You know, can I just explain kind of what was more frustrating to me was I had explained to Wynn, I believe, especially on the break, I said, you need to do word-for-word translation for me. Because I talk to him, I tell you what to say, and then it doesn't seem like that's what you're saying. I understand that. I'll do better if I remember at the break. But that was what was the most frustrating. I wasn't sure what he was saying was incorrect. It just seemed like he wasn't doing a word-for-word translation for us like I wanted to do.
Since you had that level of concern by the time of the break, did you consider an alternative, which was stop with this interpreter that didn't appear to be doing an adequate job word for word, and just start again and get Mong Mong back over there?
That would have been great. I tried to get Mong Mong back over there before that actually started, and basically refused. Somebody called him on the phone and he said, I have to go home. I've been up too long or something like that. I have to go home. I can't come back.
Okay, I understand that part. But what I'm asking is, at that time of the break, when you could see that there may be some issues, did you consider just shutting the interview down at that point and restarting again, maybe in 3 hours, and getting Mong Mong back?
Certainly, if I can go back, that's what we would have done. Had I considered it, I don't remember what my thoughts were at the time.
Mr. Parrish asked you about a portion of the interview regarding the placement of Sarnamu's body in the shower. I've read that transcript about five times, Detective. And what I'm asking you now is very narrow. Isn't it more precise to say that when Isar talked about that, he simply said, I moved the body or repositioned the body away from where it would be obvious, but he didn't specifically say, I left the body in the shower before I ran out of the apartment?
I'd have to double check, but that is... I remember first he said that he'd left the body there basically where it was in view, and then eventually he said he drug it. I thought he just had agreed that he drug it into the shower. He had agreed with either Ross or I think it was Ross that he agreed, but I can't say exactly without looking at the transcript.
Okay, so your recollection of that may be a little bit off.
Correct.
There's a section in the interview where, and tell me if this is a fair assessment. The interviewer says back to you and Agent Ross, we've got it. Remember that section?
I do.
What's your understanding of what the interpreter was saying to you right there?
I think I asked him what I don't remember exactly, but my understanding was he had just told us that he had killed her, but that was an assumption, and then I don't know what happened to get us back off that. I wanted to clarify that, obviously, but something happened in the interview where it kind of went off track away from that.
And prior to that, there's a portion of the interview, and I'm not saying these words ever came from you or Detective Ross, but the interpreter is saying to Mr. Ahmed, you need to tell the truth. If you lie to them, you will get hit harder. Remember that section of the interview?
Yeah, in the comment.
Obviously, you didn't know that was being conveyed to you, so
right.
That would have been something important for you to know.
Yes.
If you had known about these kinds of language difficulties this interpreter had, if you had known about the interpreter's connection to Sarnamu's mom and dad, would you have ever used this interpreter in this interview?
Well, obviously, if I would have known he wasn't a court-certified interpreter in general, and of course, with contact with family, of course, we wouldn't have used him.
Detective, when you or the FBI were using Mong Mong for interpreting and or this additional interpreter we were referencing today, were they compensated by some agency for their time?
I don't know.
They could have been.
I have no idea.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Direct, Mr. Parrish?
Yes, sir. We start with your interviews before you talked to Mr. Armet. You said you had participated in the interviews with at least some of his apartment roommates.
Yeah, two roommates and then the younger male. So three total interviews prior to that.
And did you talk to other officers who had spoken to the other two roommates?
Yes.
And kind of compare notes?
Yes.
And you knew all of that before you talked to Mr. Mann?
Yes.
Had you ruled out that those roommates were involved in the disappearance and the murder of Sarnamu?
I'd object to the extent that calls for speculation.
I'm just asking, as a police officer,
In my mind, I felt that they were more than likely not involved.
So, at least by the time you talked to Isar Med, was it clear that he was probably going to be the most likely of the suspects?
That was my opinion.
You said several times during cross-examination that in retrospect, with everything you now know, or in hindsight, you would have done things differently.
Yes.
Just give us an idea of what that would have entailed.
I believe that we would have either put him back in a holding cell for several hours, or possibly just booked him in jail, based on what we had at that point. I believe probable cause existed at that point. I'd have to look back, obviously, and then just located an interpreter, arranged for a new time the next day, or maybe even a day and a half later, to interview him in a different setting.
But it wasn't that clear to you at the time just how bad things were.
No. It was a very clunky. Clunky is like describe that interview. Clunky. But again, I didn't realize the interpretation was like that.
In terms of what Isar Met said concerning placing Sunmu in the shower, would you look at page 65 of that transcript?
I'm here.
About a third of the way down the page, there's a statement by Isar Met out of the shower. What does he say?
It says, I dragged her and put her into the shower.
Then let me turn to, I believe it's the next page. Now it's two pages later.
Correct.
So page 67. If you could just read what he said in that entire section.
This is what happened. She fell down the stairs. I took her to the chair and comforted her on my tummy. She ran out suddenly. I pulled her hand instantly. My pulling had some force, so she hit the wall and fell down the stairs. After she fell down, she was shaking downstairs, shaking, 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 and when she went still, I pulled her and dropped her by the foot of the bed. After I dropped her, I ran up the stairs. I saw her shoes at the entrance. I picked up the shoes, and while I threw it into the bathroom, I pulled the child by the arm and put her in the shower.
So, at least by that point, even though he had denied it earlier, he was admitting putting Suleiman's body in the shower.
Correct.
And the shoes.
Yes.
That's all I have.
Detective, you said that one possibility would have been to discontinue the interview, reconvene the interview at a later time, perhaps in another location, right?
Yes, only because if we booked him in jail, we may have to change the location of the interview. So,
but
the location wouldn't have been as important as the interpreter, obviously.
Having said that, you and Agent Ross were intent on continuing on with the interview as it appears in that transcript, despite concerns during the break about translation, because you had Isar Met right there, right then, and you were concerned that he may elect to remain silent or obtain a lawyer at a later date.
That's always a possibility, but you know, we did have some admissions at the beginning before we took the break, and so that's probably where the decision came from to continue for sure, is that the admissions had already been made and clarifications needed to be made to what he had said to us.
Just one question, Judge. In fact, before you took that break, Mr. Van had admitted that he was the cause of Sunuma's death.
Yes.
More than one.
Yes.
Peterson.
Nothing.
Let me make a record relative to the testimony of Detective Sutera. At this point, this is not part of the trial. It's certainly part of the court record because it's been done in open court. But I want to make it clear that it is not part of the trial itself and may not be part. And so I want that to be clear. That's understood, Mr. Parrish and Mr. Peterson.
Oh, we're absolutely well aware of that, which is one of the reasons we closed the courtroom today.
But I want to make that record for the purpose of the court record.
No, I appreciate what you're doing.
And I'm also just perplexed a little bit about the nature of the examination of Detective Sutera, and the time may come when I will ask further about what part of this, if any, would be used for a rebuttal case, because it seems to me you've gone over territory that you went over previously more thoroughly today, as I recall, than at the suppression hearing. But this isn't a suppression issue. This is a rebuttal case issue, and I'm not quite sure the relevance of some of those questions.
And I could certainly at least make a proffer as to that. Because the defense still has the ability, despite how the court rules about the pending motion, to argue to the jury the voluntariness issue. So that's why in rebuttal, and it will only come out in rebuttal if the defendant chooses to testify. We're having to kind of guess what he will say. But those issues are the issues that we assume we would want to question about. If there's no inconsistency, and I'm not sure quite how that would happen, but if there's no inconsistency between his testimony and what he said previously in this interview, then we probably don't get to go into that either, if the court rules we get to use it at all, ultimately. So that's the kind of strange waters that we're steering here, trying to anticipate something that may or may not even occur in the first place. But if it does, we'll have an unavailable witness. And we wanted to cover both the voluntariness issue and the key points that I expect will be inconsistent if the defendant testifies.
As usual, Mr. Parrish's analysis is spot on. That's exactly why the nature of this testimony today is as it is, because there is a twofold aspect to it. It obviously goes to the further argument on the suppression hearing, but if the court rules against our objection and our motion that Mr. Metz's police interview can be used, assuming that he ever elected to take the stand, which we don't know at this point. Still, the issue is moot at this point, Judge. If those were the circumstances and the facts, then we still get to argue to the jury that there was not an adequate interview, there was not a voluntary statement, and that other factors should be considered by the jury in disregarding what Mr. Metz said to law enforcement. So I appreciate the court is struggling with the nature and parameters of where we went today, but it's for those reasons that we went there. And it may be true, Judge, that there may be some segments that should be excised appropriately at the time of trial. We can inquire into that at a time that the state attempts or would use this in lieu of the officer's live testimony.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. I'm still perplexed, but I'm a little less so. And relative to that motion that you've requested further time to brief, are you intending to give us a little time.
Yes, Judge.
We're still
sort of on the cusp of that issue, given ongoing discussions between Mr. Met and counsel about the ultimate decision. So what I would propose is that perhaps you give me until Monday morning to know that. I mean, the problem is we won't know fully until the close of the state's evidence what election Mr. Met had made. With regard to the briefing, all I'm asking for is until Monday morning to get my very brief supplement to the court.
The state will finish its case on Tuesday, so it doesn't give me a lot of time.
I mean, you've basically been briefed by the two memoranda. I just wanted to add an extra layer of consideration and analysis that slightly broadens Mr. Parrish's analysis.
All right. I mean, it's important that I have enough time. I'm not prepared to rule on this until you do the briefing that you've promised. So I want to give you that benefit.
Well, in that regard, Judge, we do have a large cushion. If the state finished by Tuesday, in theory, maybe we could look at some of this, if need be, on a Wednesday morning. Our case, if there's any to be put on, is going to be very short. One to two witnesses in all likelihood.
Okay.
And so
Given the fact that we have to check on these testimonies, I think we're probably looking at ending on Wednesday.
And that gives us some flexibility. We may be able to get the jury out Thursday or Friday.
Right.
And we can give them short days. I realize we've got a cushion of time, which I often don't have in trials, so I'm not pushing as I often do. Notwithstanding that, I'm very concerned about the jurors' welfare, and I don't want to bring them in for an hour and send them home, that kind of thing. So that's my major concern at this point, that we recognize their need.